Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Radio Show, a Thursday edition. Been missing my little buddy going on 2 weeks now. Behind the former Iron Curtain, I believe, in the former Czech Republic. That was an Iron Curtain nation, wasn't it? So anyways, Dominic doesn't even know what he has been missing. He's missed a lot. And he's going to miss a lot, this big show. I'm going to bring on a fine guest, a legal eagle. The legalist, eagleist of them all, former U.S. attorney, James Santel. Our good friend Jim's going to join me at 4:30. And there are so many legal updates. Donald Trump's having such a bad week. You know, it makes me kind of gleeful. I've mentioned that a few times. Also, we've got the vice president in Milwaukee in the network today. Kamala Harris in Milwaukee. Talk about her in just a minute. And Trump also apparently losing his mind, declassifying documents, you know, by thinking hard. Apparently, that's how he thinks you declassified the documents. It gets a little sketchy. But anyways, yesterday, such a big day, and I apologize. Just couldn't pull it off. I was in northern Wisconsin, the northern, well, I guess I sort of Minneapolis outmarket. I was in Amory yesterday, beautiful part of the state, and by the end of the day, by the time the Devil's Advocates replay, best of, by the time it was in the 5 o'clock hour, we were on the radio in Amory, Wisconsin, our newest edition, our newest signal in the Civic Media family, WXCE, and we're calling it Lake Air. 1260 AM. So if you got friends in that part of the state, please let them know. Don't keep us a secret. And I'm up there. Evan, this story, I don't know if you are aware, but kind of felt like a big deal. I'm Main Street Amory. You know, I get out. I've been there once prior. I'd been up there to make this deal. And, you know, now it's time to actually put our format on the air. Fancy Brian doing the real work, you know, back at the tower site.
The legwork, yeah.
But I'm in town. I'm looking for an office. You know, we need a permanent location. Prime real estate. I'm looking for a good spot. So I'm up on Main Street. And, you know, it's kind of a touristy little town. Like I said, outmarket Minneapolis. Three lakes in Amory. I mean, this whole community is surrounded by lakes. Hence the Lake Air. See what we did there. But I'm standing there and I'm staring at, you know, really window fronts, looking for real estate, looking for a shop. And a woman goes, "Crudy? Yeah, exactly.
You've been recognized.
I was spotted in Amory, Wisconsin." Now, the fact that I was driving the Devil Wagon, yeah, the very garish Devil Radio Wagon with the full wrap and the colorful paint job. Now, that was parked at the curbside. So as I'm looking at the storefronts like a tourist, you know, not quite New York City style, but you know, they got a neat water tower. I was probably looking up at it. Crudy. So this woman recognizes me. Brenda. She actually already sent me correspondence. Very nice. Here's what I liked about Amory. Immediately. Well, I meet Brenda, and Brenda introduces me to Sally, and then the realtor, because Brenda likes me, now the realtor comes out, and there, I'm okay. If I'm okay with Brenda, I'm okay with them. So she's much warmer. You know, I'm in town looking for real estate. Yeah. Well, I meet half the people on Main Street in the course of like 15 minutes, they've all referred me to each other and they're cheering for each other. And we're in the Main Street radio business. So, you know, I'm quite encouraged about the whole prospect in Amory, Wisconsin.
Got an inside horse, man. You got to love it.
Got to tell you, though, hell of a long drive from here. About an 8-hour round trip.
No, thank you. Yeah. No, I'm all right.
Sort of a long day in the car. And I gained weight, too. You know, that's the worst part. You don't even get any steps. I'm not even doing any anxious pacing down the hallway here at work. So I got like 9 steps all day. Other than looking around for real estate, meeting a few nice people up in Amory. So we welcome them to the family. I've lingered on the thought long enough. WXCE Lake Air, 1260 AM. Tell somebody. And they join our friends in Richland Center listing in Wausau and Wisconsin Rapids, Stevens Point. And here in Madison, and of course, and the Shaw as well. And Eureka and Janesville, and man, it goes on and on.
Yeah,
eventually they get to hear us in Chicago this evening and a few other places on the Progressive Voices app. So as we go worldwide, we're also going statewide, and that's perhaps the most important thing. Kamala Harris in the city of Milwaukee. Now, I regret, I've been on the road 2 days this week, missed a day on the show. You know, nothing like Dominic, but I did miss a day. So I can't run down to chase the vice president today and hope to, you know, maybe get a question at the rope line or whatever you do. But here is some of the coverage. Bill Glauber, Corrine Hess at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Here is what they report of her visit. With less than 7 weeks to go before the midterm elections. Do you know what was the midterm elections coming up?
Time flies, whether you're having fun or not.
Well, if you watch the evening news at night, you're being inundated with the ads. I wish you were being inundated with a few more around here. But anyway, 7 weeks before the midterm elections, VP Kamala Harris swept into Milwaukee Thursday for a quick visit focused on meeting with Democratic attorneys general, Hispanic leaders, and young voters. Political activity has picked up substantially this month in Battleground, Wisconsin, kicked off by President Joe Biden's appearance at the Milwaukee Labor Fest, and Florida Gubernator Ron DeSantis rallying Republicans in Green Bay, sort of counter-programming the Packer game. Very thoughtful. The vice president delivered remarks at the Democratic Attorney General's Association Conference at the Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee. She then headed UW-Milwaukee. And for Harris, formerly the California Attorney General, it was a homecoming, but she came with a tough message as she blasted the U.S. Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade, the landmark case that gave a constitutional right to abortion access. At this moment, in our nation, some of our fundamental rights are at assault, Harris said. Could you have ever imagined in your lifetime that would happen? Such a fundamental right. Harris claimed that after the decision, extremists, so-called leaders across our nation, began to pass and enforce laws to criminalize doctors, nurses, healthcare providers. She praised Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call for his legal move to fight the state's 1849 abortion ban. Somebody is trying to push the legitimacy of that law, and somebody has to fight against it. Josh, our administration has your back. Democratic Governor Tony Evers and Call filed a lawsuit arguing that a 1985 law allowing abortions up to the point of fetus viability supersedes Wisconsin 1849 ban on nearly all abortions. And we all know this is the beginning, Harris said, of the opinion of Dobbs v. Jackson's Women's Health Association. When the Supreme Court removed the constitutional right to abortion that was established in 1973 with Roe v. Wade, Justice Clarence Thomas took a broader view when writing his concurring opinion. Thomas referred specifically to 3 cases that he considered to be on the same shaky constitutional footing as Roe, including Obergefell versus Hodges, which established the right to same-sex marriage in 2015. In the Dobbs decision, a justice of the United States Supreme Court says the quiet part out loud, that marriage equality may be on the line, Harris said. At UW-Milwaukee, Harris met with 13 Hispanic leaders, I see my friend Christine Newman Ortiz of Voces de la Frontera is on that list. Here is what. Who is this? Perez. Common Council, Milwaukee Common Council President Jose Perez is quoted here. I have the honor to welcome you and let you know that you are among some of the hardest working people in this community. They represent Latinos that make our region, our state better, and we're there with you. I am here to listen more than I am to talk, Harris said. You look like you could be my prima cousin, Perez said. Harris smiled, clasped hands with Perez, and said, I feel you. I wonder if she didn't know he was calling her his cousin. And she's like, I feel you. Like, I don't know what you're saying precisely, and I don't want to be disagreeable, so I feel you. I maybe read too much into that statement. Morin said he talked to Harris about his group's efforts on immigration reform, gun violence prevention, and COVID-19. It was great to have an opportunity to meet with her and talk about our priorities. I was impressed with her knowledge and her empathy. And she also, apparently, Kamala Harris also met with 13 students in an American government and politics class and spoke for the need for leadership, especially on the issue of what she called the climate crisis. Part of your leadership that I'm asking of you is to remind people about communities, about the whole, that we are all in this together. You guys will pay the price for what we do or what we have not done. And as she arrived in downtown Milwaukee, she was watched by small crowds. She was also joined by U.S. Rep. Gwen Moore, our pal Gwen Moore. But I wanted to tell you what the Republicans had to say about the arrival of the Vice President Kamala Harris in town. Before Harris's arrival, Republican Party Wisconsin Chair Paul Farrell and Republican Attorney General candidate Eric Toney held a press conference accusing the Biden administration and Democrats of failing on crime. Here's what they said. Here's the quote, at least, of Farrell. I would rather have her go down to the U.S.-Mexico border and find out what's going on, because what is happening at the southern border right now is impacting us here in Wisconsin. And I'm thinking, how so, sir? Really, really, how so? I know you want to make a big deal. Immigration plays well on Fox News. But the immigrants in the state are doing a lot of the dairy labor. Other than the fact that if they stopped showing up for work, you couldn't run a dairy in this state? Is that what you mean? I don't think that's what Farrell meant. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. It's a Thursday.
Keep up the fight for freedom.
I'm fighting for life, brother. I'm fighting for all those people that have remolded their lives, man.
Those are f***ing fighting words.
Yeah, probably.
Warning, listening to the Devil's Advocates may expose you to opposing views.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We're going to have a fine guest, a co-devil, if you will, former U.S. Attorney James Santel, joining at 4:30 Central Time. Stick around for him. In the meantime, I got to bring you the latest on Donald Trump, a couple of articles about Trump. You know, the man's had a bad week legally. I think I said Tuesday. Man, having a terrible week. It's gotten worse. It's gotten worse for the man. Of course, the lawsuit, and unfortunately, I wasn't here to relish it live with you fun folks, the lawsuit filed by Letitia James in New York. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit more, I suspect, when Jim Santel gets here. You know, we'll go over all the legal travails of the former president. But what am I looking for here? Damn it, Crudy, you hid it from yourself. Where's it at? We've got some sound. If nothing else, I want to talk about a Sean Hannity interview done by Donald Trump. And this one sounded a little confessional and perhaps could be used as evidence against him in a court of law. Now, Evan, you've done the hard work to pull it for our audience. Let's not keep it a secret. Let's share it with them. Donald Trump about how he can, let's just say, declassify documents by thinking. Cut one.
So let me ask you this question, because I think this is the next logical question, because the president of the United States, you, unlike, say, Hillary Clinton in her case, right, a president has the power to declassify.
Correct.
Okay. You had said on Truth Social a number of times you did declassify.
I did declassify, yes.
Okay. Is there a process? What was your process?
Yeah, what is that
process?
It
doesn't have to be a process, as I understand it. You know, there's different people saying different things. But as I understand it, there doesn't have to be. If you're the president of the United States, you can declassify just by saying it's declassified, even by thinking about it, because you're sending it to Mar-a-Lago or to wherever you're sending it. And there doesn't have to be a process. There can be a process, but there doesn't have to be. You're the president. You make that decision. So when you send it, it's declassified. I declassified everything.
Poof, declassified.
He thought hard, and then he shipped classified documents. He confessed that he was shipping declassified documents off to Mar-a-Lago, right? A little bit more from the sound. The you know, perhaps damning interview with Sean Hannity. Good for ratings, though. He is the ratings machine. More Trump on Hannity. Cut two, please.
Now, I declassified things, and we were having a lot of problems with NARA. You know, NARA is a radical left group of people running that thing. And when you send
those archivists,
over there, I would say there's a very good chance that a lot of those documents will never be seen again.
No, because you flushed them down the tank at Mar-a-Lago.
Oh, yeah.
Now, listen to what he claims is behind this raid, the Mar-a-Lago raid, the FBI raid on his house. Here is Donald Trump on Hannity explaining why they raided him. Couldn't be the classified documents. Why is it, Donald Trump? Play a cut three, please.
There's also a lot of speculation because of what they did, the severity of the FBI coming and raiding Mar-a-Lago. Were they looking for the Hillary Clinton emails that were deleted, but they are around someplace? Were they looking for the spying on Trump?
You had it. No,
they may be saying they may have thought that it was in there.
Okay.
And a lot of people said the only thing that would give the kind of severity that they showed by actually coming in and raiding with many, many people is the Hillary Clinton deal, the Russia stuff, or, I mean, there are a number of things, the spying on Trump's campaign. So they spied on my campaign.
It's a stretch.
Well, it's been disproven. No one ever spied on your campaign. The headline at the Raw story, Hannity interview, like covering up for your drunk uncle. A little bit drunk, a little tipsy, perhaps. Before our fine guest comes, former President Donald Trump appeared Wednesday on Fox News to talk about his bad day and legal battles with the New York Attorney General announcing a civil lawsuit, you know, against his business and the three elder Trump kids, and the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals overturning the protections put in place by his hand-picked judge. Yes, a stinging rebuke. And speaking about the day, former Chief of Staff at the Department of Homeland Security, Miles Taylor, and MSNBC host Nicole Wallace joked about Trump's claim that he could declassify someone with the power of his thoughts. The power of his very powerful thoughts. Wallace said that it was like the movie Minority Report, where the thought police can stop people from doing things illegal before they do it. Taylor said that the major difference was that the characters in Minority Report had to be smart. Addressing the Hannity interview, Taylor called it the year of karma for Donald Trump and the Republicans. He's just been held accountable this week on the mismanagement of his businesses before the presidency. It looks like the DOJ is trending towards holding him accountable for abuses of his presidential partying power, namely with, you know, classified information, and then potentially abuses of power related to handing over and being reluctant to transition power with the January 6th investigation. That's a kind way of putting it. So I think that all of those chickens are going to come home to roost. Also, according to the reporting here, he was astounded by Hannity and that Trump actually did the interview at a time when he should be exercising his right to remain silent. It has only been a few days since Trump's legal team said that they wouldn't provide any specific details because they anticipate Trump will be criminally indicted over stolen documents. I was astounded. This, again, the interview subject over on MSNBC. I was astounded that Hannity didn't the interview. I hate to say, Nicole, I also watched it, so that makes it at least two of us here today. And, you know, it almost like someone trying to cover up for a drunk uncle. At points, Hannity would interject in the interview and try to coach Trump along. And I think to question earlier in the panel, this might even be a preview of what the defense looks like. If he's actually seated up there in front of a jury, you can imagine sweating lawyers wanting to act like Sean Hannity and throw him a bone and coax him in a different direction because he doesn't seem to be able to defend himself in public, let alone in a court of law. Come back and find former federal prosecutor James Santel, our fine guest, more devils.
Most common slip up an espionage. We'd walk right into enemy hands.
You know, we'll deal with this tomorrow night.
That's not what I heard Director Comey say.
Think you know politics? Think again. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Thursday edition. I got a fine guest. He joins me right now, live via Zoom. Jim Santel, the returning champ, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours, and also the host of a fine program in its own regard, Morning Cannolis, right here on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 a.m. Central Time on Saturday mornings. Jim, I'm glad you made a little time for me this afternoon, counselor.
Always good to be with you, Mike, and especially on a big news day or days for us this week.
I only regret that both you and I had other detainments yesterday, and we couldn't do it on the live airways yesterday. The Letitia James lawsuit, the New York lawsuit, the civil lawsuit against the former president and his three eldest children, Don Jr., Eric, and Ivanka. This one could hurt the worst. This purported businessman is being sued, perhaps, to his bankruptcy. He could be, disbarred from doing business in New York State for 5 years, could be blocked from doing real estate business in the state of New York. Effectively, that would end at least his supposed business career, wouldn't it, Jim?
This does have the big consequence to it, no doubt. We recognize that when you file a civil lawsuit, even though there's been discovery, we already know about the depositions taken and in which the president, at least one or two of his children, have taken the fifth repeatedly. But this is a big, big move. It will take some time before this gets to trial or more likely a settlement at some point down the road. But you're absolutely right. This carries with it a huge consequence. Recall that this is also the attorney general, state of New York, already shut down a thing called Trump University. Remember that? The Trump Foundation also gone as a result of the same kind of civil proceeding. What's she looking for here? Seeking a judge to appoint an independent monitor, oversee the company's financial practices, to get rid of the Trumps, all of them, from leading their family business, acquiring any real estate in New York for 5 years, permanently barred from serving as officers or directors in a New York company. This is pretty extreme. It comes just short of shutting the entire thing down. Arguably, the Trump Organization can remain in place, but not much more beyond that, and not a lot of Donald Trump. If she's successful, still likely to be settled at some point down the road. A trial is not going to be good for Donald Trump, for his family, and also it will bring this to a more expedient result that, again, presumably brings this corporation, this riddled with fraud corporation, to an end.
And you think the Trumps will sign off on that? I mean, I know they did agree to a $25 million resolution, a payoff to those grifted by the Trump University. But, you know, to hear his claim, it was expediency. He was running for president, just didn't have time to deal with it. Well, Jim, the civil forfeiture ask is $250 million, which, if you believe Letitia James, could be a lot more money relative to the net worth of Donald Trump than he lets on. And above and beyond that, Jim, if you block him from doing real estate business in New York, and of course, this is the accusation, he's been corrupted or corrupted his financial dealings through real estate. But if you block him from doing real estate in New York, what's that leave the man?
It doesn't leave much at all. And so this is the big strike. Undeniably, when an attorney general like Letitia James and other people in civil litigation begin, it's a 220-page lawsuit. Mike, I know you've read through all of it. I'm still getting through it. There's a lot there, lots of very specific claims. You aim for the bleachers, so to speak, and you throw it all in there. there's an awful lot of very specific, compelling detail. There are also some places likely for there to be some compromise. What that looks like, maybe it is money. Maybe it is some limited authorization to engage in some business deals down the road. And when I say this will be settled, let me be very clear, no time soon. What you're going to hear, as you've already heard, is this lawsuit is crazy. This lawsuit is based upon political animus. And it's going to be at least a couple of years before we're talking on this radio program about some resolution of it. Best settlements where everybody leaves a little bit unhappy, even with a settlement of this case down the road after lots of motions and challenges and responses and an answer and those kinds of things, likely some resolution that brings this closer to the kind of thing that she did with the Trump University and the foundation. Who knows where Donald Trump will be in 2 years? Who knows where the country will be in 2 years? Things can change an awful lot, as we know.
Jim Santel, there's also perhaps a unforeseen consequence to the Trump organization. Whether or not she is able to prove these things through a civil process, there could be covenants in a lot of the borrowing structures. I mean, you don't borrow hundreds of millions of dollars from different institutions without some covenants in the loan obligations. And I would say, you know, Mike Crude, I've done a few business loans, Jim, mostly as the borrower. But if I were charged by a state attorney general, if there were accusations of fraud against me, you know what? My banker just might cut me off, Jim. What do you think the likelihood that the good folks down at Deutsche Bank and a few of the other lending sources are looking real closely at the current mortgage documents of the Trump org?
They're staying up all night, and they have been for a number of weeks, if not months, heightened just in recent hours. Deutsche Bank, Mazars, which again, the attorney general spoke about yesterday, this Cushman Wakefield firm, apparently also under investigation. Everybody right now is going back, as they probably have been for a number of years, and figuring out what's in this portfolio. What did we agree to? What did we frankly not look at as diligently as we probably should have? Not that that's a legitimate defense to Donald Trump submitting false statements, but you better believe that, again, if this should go to trial, and even the trial of public opinion, this would be an awful lot of focus upon these companies, too. The question, as is already out there, which is going to be, you must have known. What due diligence did you pursue? And so internal to these companies, they're all looking at that. Still does not undermine the notion that you've got to be honest in making your loans and pursuing applications. Doesn't undermine the falsification that you have done in making these representations to these financial institutions.
Our fine guest, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. So if I'm understanding you, counselor, Donald Trump is a BS artist. Everybody in industry knows it. His reputation preceded him. So even if he is making false representations to his bank, and of course, there has to be a harmed party, or at least Letitia James is saying, well, the banks were being defrauded here. But if the banks see through the charade, if you will, and know that Donald Trump is less trustworthy than his financial representations, there is a strong probability that the bank may have more conservative asset evaluations on their own books, Jim, that they did their own appraisals, that they, you know, took their own internal advice as opposed to the inflated values of Trump. And I think Trump's defense in part will be, and therefore, if they know I lie, how could they possibly have been harmed? They loaned me the money, and in most cases, I paid it back.
Right, right. And that's exactly what we're already hearing from the words, the mouth of Donald Trump and people around him. That will certainly, if this goes to trial, undeniably, the Mazars and Deutsche Banks of the world, they themselves will be put on trial by the defense. That's the tactic that we're going to see. And again, not without some reason, right? And we always assume that if you are getting a corporate loan, Mike, there is going to be some inquiry about who you are, what you've done, that sort of thing. It does get you somewhere. And it also should prompt Letitia James, as someone who's responsible for ensuring the corporation legitimacy of banks and others and operating in New York, come back. And as I think your previous question sort of indicating, take a look at what kinds of things we need to ensure that they themselves are behaving accurately. Again, that is going to be a focus of this, and it should be. At the same time, it does not absolve him of civil responsibility. And also recall, as you were sort of suggesting, that Letitia James has referred this on where? Also to the IRS and to the feds, the Federal Department of Justice, for its review for possible criminal exposure here. We know down the street as well that Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan DA.
I'm not even dignifying the name Alvin Bragg with a response at this point, but please continue, counselor.
Right. Lots of things coming from this, and we can't predict with absolute certainty. But she is once again firing on all cylinders here, and is going to be undeniably during the course of discovery coming up. Will Mazars and the practices of the lending institutions themselves be subject to discovery? You bet. The documents produced, likely depositions, oral depositions of people responsible for these loans. Who said what to whom? What were your understandings? And could you really have been duped? Were you duped? Were you simply so interested in getting these financial arrangements in place that you were willing to overlook some of this? All that's going to be a part of discovery again in the next months and years.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got the finest of guests. He is James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of his own fine show, Born in Cannolis, Saturday mornings, right here on the Civic Media Network. Give him a listen, 9 to 11. You can stream it. You can probably hear it on your radio. But, Jim, I wanted to talk about some of the things. Now, I came from the real estate mortgage industry. I worked in it 20 years. I saw the highs. I saw the crash. Here's what I would say. We knew that certain people were making inflated representations. I always used to joke that every salesman I ever met talked about his best month and then multiplied times 12 and then would claim that was his income. A lot of small business owners sort of, you know, they would talk about their gross income, not their net income. And they would use terms interchangeably that a bank would certainly differentiate between. But here's where I see a different than, you know, a little puffery, Jim. He lied about the square footage of his real estate. He's got a penthouse in Trump Tower, and he's claiming $100 million valuation on a 30,000 square foot penthouse. Only the penthouse is under 11,000 square feet, Jim. I mean, that is a material misrepresentation on an enormous sense. I mean, the square footage cost, can you imagine? And the highest price unit in Trump Tower at that time, the highest sale was $16,500,000, Jim. There was no freaking way, right?
And everyone is saying, I'm not even as attuned as you are, Mike, into the real estate market, but everyone is saying that even in New York, there's no apartment, no condominium there that goes anywhere near this amount of money. You know, a couple of other indications of the level of his fraud and the importance of the word you just used, materiality. He's got a 40 Wall Street property worth $200 million, values it at twice that amount, $400 million. He's got some rent stabilized apartments in Trump Park on Park Avenue. Independent expert says $750,000. 2012. He values them at $50 million. And so, again, you hit on it just rightly. The question is always, you know, we'll let you do under the law, under commercial engagements, let you do some puffery. That's right. You know, the car is a wonderful car, and it's the property has got all these value. We'll do that. It's about the extremes, the huge, huge amounts of overstatements, not just puffery here around the edges. And that's where materiality comes in place. That's where you argue to a jury or to a judge that this was not just some salesman who wanted to accomplish this deal by telling you how much you'll love it. And you know, maybe there's a few things around the edges. He didn't tell you about the refrigerator that needed repair. The square footage was maybe a little bit off, that sort of thing. The extreme nature of this implicates not just civil liability, but I would offer criminal liability also, because now you're saying something that is so materially outrageous that it does invoke things like false statements and fraud, again, criminal fraud in the making of those statements. You got it just right.
Jim, you know, I'd like to talk about Mar-a-Lago when we get back. Here's a guy claiming he could develop this as a residential property and claiming a value approaching $1 billion on something that was generating $25 million a year in income and maybe had a value of three times gross income, you know, maybe $75 million. That's 1,000% puffery in the value of this. And when we talk about the material misrepresentation. The guy basically gave up the right to develop Mar-a-Lago through local ordinance, through a covenant, through his development of the social club that is Mar-a-Lago, his beloved. Well, he cannot develop it residentially. It's a material misrepresentation. It's another fraud, clear fraud, that you or I, Jim, certainly I, when I was in that industry, would have gotten my license pulled and probably gotten my ass thrown in jail. Jim, hold that thought. Come back.
Never get away with it. And again, the fraud is just over the top.
More Devils. Never over the top.
I declare
declassified.
The Devil's Advocates, political commentary from the back of the class. I went home with
a waitress. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got a fine guest. He's stuck around. He's former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Been promising Merrick Garland Day coming soon. But if I'd have been here yesterday, it would have been Letitia James Day, a civil lawsuit against Trump and his three eldest children in the state of New York. That's a lot of legal troubles. But, Jim, there's also been this issue, and I've always known. I mean, we've suspected Trump has been cheating on his taxes. Why? Because he says those that pay their taxes are suckers. I've seen the Pulitzer Prize-winning, award-winning journalism of the New York Times, where they basically took his sister's financial federal records and other tax records, compilated them, and showed what a massive tax fraud this guy was. But above and beyond that, Jim, there's the whole classified documents, the paperwork crimes over at Mar-a-Lago. And I don't know if you watched the Foxy News last night. I know you were busy doing work, but he went on Hannity's show. Trump did, the former. And he claimed that he could basically think a document into declassification. And above and beyond that, Jim, he also basically made perhaps a evidentiary statement that, you know, and then he just shipped the boxes onto Mar-a-Lago. Something of a confession, counselor, but maybe you should skip the interviews. You know, what's your thoughts, sir?
Right. Absolutely. As we have talked so many times, Mike, you and I, and on this very good educational radio station, the best advice for somebody who's under civil investigation and now facing a civil lawsuit, certainly criminal investigation. Can we count the number of venues looking at him criminally? I've lost track myself, is to be quiet. I know that's very difficult for Donald Trump. That has not been a part of his MO throughout his life, but he's got to be quiet about these things. And every time his lawyers hear these kinds of things, they must be rolling over in maybe not disbelief, but in huge frustration. This notion, first of all, that there is no process. Of course, there is a process for declassifying documents. It underscores once again what we've talked about in many other settings. This president has never understood anything about government. And I know this is kind of in the weeds, and declassifying documents isn't at the head of every civic syllabus out there. But yes, as the president of the United States of America, you've got access to these things. It is not the case that there is no process, or even worse, it is laughable, if it would not be so tragic, that he can simply think these into declassification status, take them to Mar-a-Lago, and then do with them whatever he would like to do with them. That is not only flatly wrong, it is a reflection of the arrogance that this man has. And I would offer simply the lack of any understanding about how government works, about what his responsibilities are as the president of the United States of America. And as you watch that Hannity interview last night, which also includes his statement, which he said before, that maybe, just maybe, the FBI was looking for Hillary's emails, you recognize once again that this is not a serious interview. This is not a serious television show at all. This is one that's just meant to feed some masses who want to continue these crazy, crazy theories. My takeaway from that last night was, my gosh, we elected this person to be the president of the United States of America in 2016. How do we explain this once again to our grandchildren? How did this happen? That man who says these kinds of things expresses that kind of not just contempt for the government, but complete misunderstanding and arrogance. How did he become the most powerful man in the country, and arguably on the face, we did that. We did that. Shame on us. And let us not make the same mistake once again. We have got to banish this man into political oblivion to ensure that he never comes back to do these kinds of things again.
Well, I didn't think we should banish Hannity, but I think you mean Trump. My fine guest, James Santel. Hannity, if you'll recall, Jim, from the, you know, it's been a couple of months, it would be a big deal if, you know, one of my journalists was on the air and they also was public record and evidence that they had been texting with the former president on January 6th and his chief of staff, more accurately. But one guy who has been quite a bit quieter of late, Mark Meadows, kind of went underground, Jim. And there is some speculation afoot that perhaps the former chief of staff to Trump might be cooperating with the federales. Otherwise, why would they have not gone forward on his contempt of Congress charges like they did with Steve Bannon?
Right. Lots of indicators out there that the former chief of staff has suddenly, maybe in consultation with family, said, you know what? This is going to go badly, even though it may be fun in the moment to engage in this kind of crazy banter about the future of our nation and the present status of our nation. He's finally said, I've got to be concerned about myself. He has indicated that plainly he'll begin to cooperate with the subpoenas issued to him. Every reason to believe that this is a man who, again, finds himself in the crosshairs, not just of the criminal investigation by the Department of Justice, but also by that January 6th commission, which wants to talk with him, presumably doing that as well. The fact that he is not out there publicly is not absolute proof that he is cooperating, but certainly people like Hannity would be calling him on the air. There's still some folks out there who are doing those kinds of interviews. He is not. And he has been a defender of the former president for a long period of time. My own guess, like yours, is that he's now finally begun to realize he may have some criminal exposure for January 6th before, during, and after. And may know other things, all these other investigations, and is beginning to recognize that really in the end, the only people who come out of these reasonably well are people who are in first and talking with people who are investigating and can give up information about others more culpable, arguably, than themselves. That, to me, describes Mark Meadows today.
Jim Santel, do you have a little bit more time? Because I see we're almost out of time for the allotted interview. Can you stick around into the happy hour?
I would be delighted to always, Mike. You know that.
Because, you know, Ginny Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, apparently she's going to make a voluntary appearance before the January 6th committee. They have scheduled their next live J6 hearing, and that's going to happen September 28th. We anticipate, if you tuned in right about noon, you'd hear gavel-to-gavel coverage right here. And here's a quick one before we go to break. Maybe we can sneak one in. Michael Gabelman's corrupted former Wisconsin Supreme Court justice went out and basically is talking about, you know, the tree of liberty must be, watered with the blood of, he didn't say tyrants, but effectively with the blood of revolution. The man's out there calling for revolution, Jim. Seems strong words for an officer of the court. I realize he has the right to First Amendment free speech, Jim, but is the guy pushing his luck legally making statements like this publicly?
He is. It's reckless. There's also a thing called fighting words out there, incitement, as we know, to violence. He's getting awfully close to that. The lawyers and former judges, justices do have the opportunity to say things that are on their minds, but he's coming very close to that. He also still has, as you indicated, some bar responsibilities. And lawyers take an oath of office to promote the rule of law, public confidence. Wonder out loud if the preamble, the oath that we take, is also not being violated by him.
Come back with us. The happy hour, the Thursday version, with a fine guest. He's sticking around. James Santel, former U.S. attorney. He's the returning champ. Return with us.
And we can all look in a mirror, find some blame somewhere.
It's not about me.
Okay, Boomer.